Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Twanda Black, your host, and joining me this morning, author Nancy Eisenberg. She's author of Fallen Founder, The Life of Aaron Burr, and a few other books. But this book today that we're talking about is called White Trash, The 400-Year Untold History of Class in America. Good morning to you, Nancy.
Good morning.
First of all, white trash? Why do you want to write about that?
Well, I think because Americans have a tendency to not want to talk about class, they buy into a myth, one that, you know, Richard Nixon advanced in 1959, that we are a classless society, and that even individuals like Thomas Jefferson made the pitch at the time of revolution that we broke away from British society and therefore we eliminated class and we created a new exceptional society that would promote social mobility.
Wow.
But the historical facts just don't prove that that's true.
Yeah, you say that, you know, this book disrupts the notion of the American dream as being achievable through the pursuit of a traditional educational path. And it's just not so. And I tell you, a lot of it just kind of broke my heart. So where did the marginalizing of white people start?
Well, I start this book all the way back in the period of British colonization.
Mm-hmm.
So even before people were arriving from Great Britain in the United States, as early as 1584, they began to talk about how the purpose of sending people to the New World was to eliminate the expendable people, people who could not be made productive.
Wow.
And that's actually where the word white trash comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from the word waste people, which was used by this British adventurer, Richard Hakluyt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's analogized to one of the things that not only British people, but Americans and people in rural society saw class as connected to land and land metaphors, topography. So in a sense, they viewed waste people as analogous to wastelands,
goodness,
that are unfit for cultivation,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
are left fallow.
Mm-hmm.
And that continued to linger on in the way in which Americans viewed poor white people as people who didn't put down roots, who didn't own property, people who were also analogized to vagrants, as seen as people who, in a sense, didn't contribute to the economy and couldn't actually, when they say unfit, didn't believe that they could be educated.
Wow. Well, I know that in the beginning, I mean, you just drilled down in this book. It, phenomenal information, things I had no clue about. And but, you know, during that time, those people were an embarrassment to America. Because they said they, you know, they couldn't do anything. They were breeding. They were, I mean, it was just, it went on and on. And then you turn around and look at where we are today. And, you know, that hasn't really changed. And the perception of it has not changed.
Right. I mean, this is what's really disturbing, because I show, not only do I show the importance of land analogies,
mm-hmm.
but I talk, as you said, about breeding and
yeah.
pedigree,
yeah.
and that will lead to analogies to animals. So some of the terms of
mm-hmm.
derision was to refer to the poor as tackies, an inferior breed of horse on the marshes of Carolina. There you have both the inferior land, swamps, and you have inferior individuals. But they analogized, which was more common in rural society, but it was very common to think of humans and animals as breeds in a comparable way,
yeah.
to the point where they began to argue that they were, that their inferiorness was congenital. It was in the blood.
Mm.
And that was widely accepted by the mid-19th century.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even Abraham Lincoln was attacked as white trash when he was contrasted to Jefferson Davis.
Yeah.
And he was also seen as a prairie mudsill, which was the term of derision that the Confederacy used to attack the Union soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
A mudsill is a post that's stuck into a ground. And the Confederacy were proud of the fact not only that they exploited slaves and African Americans, which they said were on the bottom rung,
right.
but they were proud that there was less social mobility in the South than in the North, because they believed that social mobility would lead to class revolution.
Wow.
And these are the things that people don't know about our past, that
mm-hmm.
we need to understand the intersection of race and class and the importance of the constant reinvention of our class language.
Right.
And the class tension is not something that just happened now.
In the past, we think election. It did, right.
Right. It's always, in a sense, and that's what I show over and over again. It moves to the forefront of political debates at crucial junctures in American history.
It did. And you talk about even, you mentioned who you just mentioned, but Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, all were considered kind of poor white trash, but they had to. Well, you said something, and I need to find that quote, but how they had to be made into who they were made into, because that could be done.
Yeah, I mean, this is the other strange side to the story, is that Carter was not white trash. Mm-hmm. He grew up in a fairly wealthy family. He grew up with a tennis court in the backyard. But there's this strange tension that we have. On the one hand, as I show over and over again, there's a distrust.
Yeah.
There is a hostility that somehow poor whites, first of all, not only do they not deserve charity, it's the argument that it won't even help them anyway.
That's the sad part, yeah.
Right. But then on top of that, we have the assumption that because of our democracy, and this goes back to Andrew Jackson, mm-hmm. and it certainly played out in Carter's run as well as Clinton's run, that politicians have to pretend to be one of the people. And I quote this Australian commentator from 1949 who said that we don't have a real democracy in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We have a democracy of manners. And this is also something we can see being played out over and over again. Not only do you have Trump wearing his bubble cap and being praised for his raw honesty, for the way he spoke, even someone like Herbert Walker Bush, when he ran,
mm-hmm.
who came from blue blood and a WASP background, had to campaign with a country singer and brag about loving pork rinds. So we insist that there's a masquerade. We insist that people who aren't, who are of the elite class,
not even close,
lower themselves,
right.
And during the campaign,
mm-hmm.
but it's a masquerade. It's not who they are, and it doesn't even reflect the policies, necessarily the policies they're going to back or support.
But look, this quote stuck me right here, and I have it highlighted in the book. It says Lyndon Johnson knew this when he quipped, "If you can convince the lowest white man he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice you're picking his pockets. Hell, give him somebody to look down on and he'll empty his pockets for you." That's exactly what happened in this election. How could they look at Trump and think he could possibly relate to them in any way?
Right. No, it's this is the problem.
It's amazing.
They respond to, I said, the appearance, the tone, the voice, the way in which a candidate presents himself, what we call the personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that was well recognized even before Lyndon Johnson. There was William Randolph Hearst, who was a billionaire and had more money than Trump, who ran in 1904.
Mm.
And this was recognized. But this is what I like to mention. It's really important. I mean, William Randolph Hearst argued that unions were essential for improving the condition of working class Americans. And none of that is endorsed by the Republicans or Trump. And in fact, they have been the ones that have been attacking unions and dismantling them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the sad story. And the same thing is true of the health care bill. The health care, who is it going to hurt the most? White and all rural Americans.
Yes.
Because we now know that we have health care and service deserts in rural America, and this health care bill is going to make coverage deserts.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really that unfortunate divide between where candidates pretend to be somebody, pretend to make promises, and then if you actually look at their policies, Trump is seriously hurting the people who supported him and voted for him.
Exactly. And in the America's Strange Breed chapter, you talk about, this being an essential part of American history, and so too is the backlash that occurs when attempts are made to improve the conditions of the poor. And, and the Bible says the poor you will always have with you. The politicians are making sure that there's always. And it's not a race thing.
Very complicated. I mean, race is certainly a factor because, the way in which the birthers went after President Obama.
Oh, yeah.
What did they attack? They attacked his breeding.
Right.
That somehow he was this, that he was his father's son and wasn't a real American.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there clearly is racial tension.
But it's small.
Also, there's also this tension that is, you know, just as important that we have to pay attention to is, you know, class tension,
yeah,
class rivalry,
mm-hmm,
class competition. And there is this resentment. There's a resentment among rural Americans that they are the forgotten, and this,
yes,
is something that Trump exploited, or they are the disinherited. And this is where the anti-immigrant rhetoric,
mm-hmm,
played,
mm-hmm,
well, because it's seen as if the government is bending over backwards, or liberals are bending over backwards to help immigrants, and then ignoring rural and working class Americans who are dismissed as, you know, being too conservative, too religious,
mm-hmm,
or, you know, dismissed for being racist. And that also feeds this divide that we exist in today that has been exploited by politicians.
This is an amazing book. How long did it take you to write it and do all the research?
Well, I mean, history, I started working on this book, you know, 9 years before it came out.
Mm-hmm.
You spent, you know, you read, I mean, as my lengthy endnotes show you, I've read tons of documents and spent lots of time in an archive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do that kind of research, that's kind of key to me for when you can trust a historian, is,
yeah,
always look at their endnotes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then you can see if they've done the work, because it requires a great deal of work. But it's an enjoyable labor, because it's all about the discovery and trying, as I tried to do in this book, is force us today to rethink the importance of class.
My God.
Because,
yeah,
it is part of our history. We Americans sometimes tend to forget our history.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm,
I think that's one of the things why history is so important. We have to understand who we are today, we have to understand the past.
Who we were, right, where we came from. This,
right,
is a phenomenal book. I mean, we probably need an hour to talk about it, but we don't have an hour.
Right.
Tell folks where they can learn more about you and where they can get the book from.
Well, the book is available, you know, from, you know, Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's available from Barnes & Noble. It's also available in independent bookstores. I'm quite proud that this week it's number 2 on the independent bookstore bestseller,
right,
list. It's been on the New York Times,
mm-hmm,
paperback bestseller list. So you can go to the Viking website. You can go to any major book site, the one you like to go to, and you will be able to get the new paperback. And the new paperback does have a new preface that talks about the Trump election.
Okay. All right. Phenomenal book. It's called White Trash, The 400-Year Untold History of Class in America. Everybody needs to read this book. The author is Nancy Eisenberg. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.